December 16th, but I have a test tomorrow.
Judiciary and law enforcement meeting is coming to order Wednesday, November 1st. We will do roll call.
Leah Blau?
Here.
Boyd Frederick?
Here.
Greg Renslaw?
Here.
Michael Skalitsky?
If it matters, he should be here soon. He called me, said he's hung up in traffic.
Jeff Wambo?
Here.
Anna DeLisi?
Here.
Morgan Kalamaka?
Here.
Okay, citizens' comments. Floor is open to citizens' comments. Any citizens wishing to speak? You have 5 minutes. Citizens' comments? Any citizens' comments? There are no citizens' comments as proposed. Supervisor comments? Any supervisor comments?
Okay. I have one. Just curious for you guys. In lieu of yesterday, what happened in New York, do you ever get anything from Homeland Security, Department of Justice about communications with people that rent trucks? Is this something that you've thought about, talked about, heard about? They said they were doing this in New York City. I don't know. Nothing.
Nothing here, right?
Joint Terrorism Task Force in Milwaukee does monitor that kind of stuff. But they will only send it out if they feel like it's necessary.
Yeah.
It's not a daily updates or anything for that effect.
Yeah.
So I'm sure New York City is much more robust.
Well, I know. I was just curious. They brought that up. I just thought about that. I mean,
I get monthly bulletins from the state that when they compile, say there's a bunch of police uniforms that have been stolen, that'll be put out. You know, any suspicious kind of activities around the state, Midwest type of thing, they will let us know and we put it out. So we get them.
But how would you? A rental car.
Truck.
Rental car. I mean, how can that be absent other indicators, how could that be a terrorist threat?
No, you know. I think what they were saying is that the Department of Justice or the police department in New York was having open conversations with people that rent trucks. What that conversation is, I don't know. They just mentioned this seems to be the new mode of operandi for terrorist attacks, is to mow people down in rent trucks. It's happened now 3 or 4 times worldwide, now in New York. I was just curious if this ever, you know, you ever hear this stuff, if it gets, maybe this will be a new thing that might come out, or some conversations that from the department. Do you ever get anything from the Department of Justice on
federal
stuff? Yeah.
No.
No.
It's all filtered through Joint Terrorism Task Force statewide.
Okay.
They may hear about it in Madison and then filter it to us, but we don't hear directly.
Okay. You got an opinion?
Just, I think, but there's watch lists, I believe, aren't there, out there?
That's how
it relates more to the truck. If someone was on a watch list and they rented a truck, then that might catch their attention versus, like Bob was saying, not every truck is
right.
going to trigger an investigation.
Well, it fits a current recipe that's out on the terrorism networks and ISIS networks about renting vehicles or taking vehicles and running them into crowds. That's why they're looking at this much more closely, because it's out there as far as do A, B, and C if you're going to go and commit these events. So they actually have the recipe out there for this kind of stuff. So I don't know how you're going to screen everybody that rents a vehicle.
I mean, that is
not an easy task.
I'm not saying. I'm just curious. It's
okay. Any other comments? Okay. Chairwoman comments. I do not have any at this time. Approval of minutes from October 11, 2017. Can I have a motion to approve?
Motion to approve.
Second.
The motion was made by Supervisor Frederick, seconded by Supervisor Wambo. All those in favor, or youth and governments, do you approve the minutes?
Aye. Yes.
Committee?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Passes. Okay, the first presentations, 2017 Federal Inmate Detainee Housing Revenue Report for third quarter 2017, provided to committee.
That's kind of a formality, I think. Oh. I think I sent it up to...
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So are there any questions about that? Mm-hmm.
No.
No questions? If you guys have questions, please bring them up to Donna. Okay, so we'll then move on. Memo from the Kenosha County Sheriff's Department recognizing surplus federal inmate housing revenue.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This is a memo notifying the county board of our intention on recognizing excess revenue from the federal housing inmates. We are requesting, or we are anticipating a surplus of $576,617 in the federal inmate housing revenue at the end of the year. Our intention is to use this anticipated surplus to support overages currently in overtime, temporary salaries, FICA, retirement, pharmaceuticals, license permits, and guard dog expenses. Our actual average of our federal population is estimated to be at 221 per day at the end of 2017, and the adopted budget number was 199 per day, which is the estimate of the $576,000. This does not require any board, any committee action. It's just a simple notification to realize this anticipated excess revenue.
The money, how far or how deep do you think that'll go, the 576, into helping with the overtime budget? I mean, is it how much do you think that's going to dent that?
The overtime budget has exploded. I don't have the actual numbers to date, but that has exploded. This is not just overtime budget. It's also other things like I mentioned, the temporary salaries, FICA expenses, retirement. Those are linked to the overtime budgets, but also it's pharmaceuticals, which we are seeing an overage in our expense line, and licensing, permitting, and our canine expenses this year.
Are the pharmaceuticals the Narcan? Is that what you're talking about?
No.
In general?
No, the Narcan was very generously donated by the health department from the county, so we thank them openly. And it was wonderful that they... no, the pharmaceuticals are inmate pharmaceuticals. We're running over budget in that item this year.
One of the issues that I had during budget time, and I still do, is this: the amount of money that the county actually makes on this. Were you there when that was brought up about
on the
last year? Yeah, is $1.4 million that we actually budget. We actually went to the, you know, it gets stuck in a reserve that they can't touch. And to me, I think that's something we need to look at, why that has to be put towards general fund when it could be used for some of their issues down the line. We make a lot, I guess for some reason, whatever the feds give us versus what our costs are, we make really nice money. $1.4 million it's in 16. So do you have an opinion on that?
I do not have an opinion. I was present for that 45-minute robust discussion at the Finance Committee. I do not have an opinion.
Okay. Well, in my opinion, I think something we should look at. Just to think about that next year, when that gets brought up, from the audited, you know, after the year's audited, and we see the actual figures for the year, then the budget comes out about 2 months later, and that figure gets just put somewhere else. I would think you should be able to use some of that for some of the needs that you have outside of. My point is, I'd like us to try to think about getting away from some of the bonding on some of your stuff. That's you know, the cars and the big stuff I get, but some of the littler things, you know, some of the crime prevention items that you guys like and buy and need. Instead of bonding that, if you had your own little spare budget that you could take that from, instead of us having to put that on the bond so much, also would give you some teeth into that, because it's kind of like your money, so you would make, I think, harder decisions about some of those things, about do we really need this stuff, because you really put together your wish list to us for your stuff. In general, we probably approve it. Well, you know, I guess last year we argued about, do you need all these things? And you're going to argue, yes, we do, especially the sheriff. Well, my thought is, if you had some of that in a reserve the money that you made from federal inmates, then you could come to us in the budget committee and say, we want $400,000 in whatever, okay, crime prevention stuff that you guys like. But instead of having it bonded, we'll take it out of that little pool that they get from the profits made from the federal inmates. I don't know if you heard the conversation. Last year, 2016, we made $1.4 million off the federal inmate. We just do as a county because what the feds pay versus what our costs are is, and that just gets slammed back towards the general fund. It's their money, in my opinion. Yeah. Go ahead. Do you have an opinion on that?
My thought was I thought that you're in a position to keep that within the sheriff's budget, but clearly not. It's going to the general fund. There's one area that I think probably the toughest jobs are your corrections officers, right? And you know, trying to make an adjustment there, but they are the ones that are shouldering that burden of additional headcount in the correctional facility that you had to bring on this year. At least I remember this year mentioning that. But yet, they don't. You don't get the kind of share it with them. They earn it for everybody, but it goes in the general fund, and you guys aren't able to. So to your point, there's certain things you're bonding for that we could potentially be covering there, as well as maybe earmarking some of that very hard-earned revenue. It's not a desirable position to be in, is to manage some of these people. To be able to, and I brought this up before, incentivize, bonus, whatever, and I've been kind of told, well, that's not feasible. I don't know why it should be, but I concur with what you're saying, rather than bonding things.
The small things.
Yeah.
I understand cars, some building
They've
things.
They've got the life to them, then we should bond for it. If they don't have the life for it, then it should be coming
out. You know, the things with like vests, you know, the list that they come up with every couple of years of stuff that they want. And
can you refresh like my memory? I don't know, because I don't remember some of that. What was the counter argument? Was there one?
Wasn't really one. It's just the way we do things. Okay, years ago, I guess none of these gentlemen will probably hear them. They used to have that. Each division used to kind of have a fund. Then suddenly became termed, it got termed as a slush fund. And they go, well, let's just, you know, get that all out of there and put it to the general fund and let the board decide on how we're going to spend it. And to me, I don't think that's, especially now we have our general fund is over the 17%, well over 17% of our minimum. It's $18 million over it. Why we do it for Brookside. Brookside is their own accounting, and they were going to lose $600,000 this year, but they have a $1.2 million reserve. That's where it right comes out of. Doesn't come out of the general fund. Real slick. I don't know why. Yep. And the sheriff has got such a giant budget.
Golf, too.
And golf. But why we don't help them with some of that is what I'm getting at here. Okay. And I just, you know.
This is the first year that we anticipate realizing a loss, a negative balance at the end of the year, in as many years as Nancy Otis can remember. We are anticipating this $576,000 in excess revenue at the end of the year. Year to date, we are at 500 and, I lost the number here. Year to date, we're 534,000. We're asking for 576,000, but our expense line, we will probably be much closer to 1.3 or 1.5 million over. So even with the 576 plus any we make in November or December, we are going to have a budget loss this year.
Is it primarily on overtime?
Primarily, yes, sir.
That animal is tough.
Yep. It's a shortfall, man.
Yeah. Well, I understand that. That's a different subject. You do it at 1.4 pool sitting there. It's sitting in an accounting from the federal inmate profit we make off of that business.
I do know last August we had a similar memo we requested a year ago, you know, 14 months ago, we requested about $660,000 in realizing excess revenue to shore up our overtime budgets and whatever, just like we're asking today. So that $1.4 million that's out there somewhere, we use it as we go along, because otherwise we would never be able to.
But last year you didn't, because it's in the books as being, it's there. I didn't bring it. It's a line item in the audit that says $1.4 million.
I guess that's action for the county board.
Yeah. But, okay.
Have you taken that up as a conversation or as a back, I would say, line, a discussion point in the finance committee?
Yes. And the comments were, let's stay with the current system to see what this general fund is going to look like, and it might make sense down the road to do this. They just want to be sure that the general fund is going to be where it is. I mean,
so if it's currently at, did you say 17?
It's currently well over 17% minimum.
Okay.
It's to the tune, I think, of 18 million over that.
Yeah, I thought so.
What's the
general fund's going to look like? I think it looks pretty doggone
good. It does look
good,
pretty good,
doesn't it?
And I have this issue. That's what I had in the fund. Why are we bonding? Why can't we at least take some out of that? And that was shot down. They said, we don't do that. We're a little uncomfortable touching that general fund. That's not their problem, but
I know we're getting a little off the rail here, but
I mean we were
it's all the argument about the AAA bond rating, but money right now for borrowing is dirt cheap.
It is.
It has no effect. It will have virtually, you'll not even see it. It'd be a rounding error on its impact for our long term debt service right now if we were at triple versus double.
All right.
But yet we refuse to change our behavior.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. That's all I got.
How long have you been housing inmates? How far back? How many years?
Federal inmates, probably 18 years. Before Sheriff Beth was elected to office, we had some marshal inmates. So probably 17, 18, 19 years-ish.
And how many did you start out with back then?
Started out with minimal numbers, just with marshals. And then immigration piggybacked off of the agreement we have with the U.S. Marshal. We actually don't have an agreement with the immigration. They piggyback off of the Marshall's agreement.
No, Greg, did you say that they used to have a separate?
Yeah, I was told way back.
Way back.
Like way back.
Maybe that was, you know, I'm just thinking maybe that's why they weren't too sure how much they were going to be getting.
I'm not sure. I don't know the exact reasons why they stopped doing it, but it was. Another thing on the federal inmates that I'm not. Sheriff Beth only wants 219, is that the?
The budgeted number, the requested budgeted number was 212 for next year.
Okay, how many can you take?
That's a manpower issue.
If manpower was not an issue, how many could you take?
Could fill our capacity of our jail.
Remember, they would have to open another wing.
I know, okay. I understand.
Or
capacity of our jail is 970. Our current population today in custody is 788, so we could take 112 more if we had the manpower to handle it.
Would I'm talking just federal now, just federal inmates.
Would you take
them or not? If I know it's the trade-off is manpower versus that having, if it's profitable to have them. I understand. That's a question
for the sheriff, because it's that delicate balance of we could take 112 more if immigration had them. We don't know if they have them. That's the great unknown about this. And if our staff could handle it. If we would have 112, that's two dorms staffed solely on overtime, and we put ourselves at complete capacity.
That's tough.
That's a decision the sheriff makes.
200 is our ice cap.
Would we have to go to the standards that they're looking at if we go that high?
We are currently on the standards that we exist now. There wouldn't be any change from a population standpoint. No.
Okay. It's kind of a catch 22 to a certain extent, because I understand you can't manpower.
No, they couldn't do it. Right,
couldn't
now.
Do it. No.
In theory.
Years ago, we averaged 350 federal inmates for a long period of time. Those were the golden years. We had money hand over fist. you know, that we were pulling all kinds of money back then. Immigration doesn't guarantee that now. It's such a sliding scale that, you know, and we don't want to kill our people.
Right.
So the sheriff has set the number, what?
200 for ICE.
200 for ICE.
200 for
and
ICE.
We average anywhere between 60 and 70 marshals. So that would be where we would be approaching our capacity.
But the ICE only, now for federal marshals, aren't you only asked to keep for 48 hours?
No, we have marshals with us long term.
Then who are you only being asked to keep? Is that not for 48 hours before the federal ICE comes and gets them? Is that?
We've had them for 48 hours. We've had them for a day. We've had them for a year and a half.
Okay.
Depends on what that particular court case on that particular inmate is.
Okay.
Is ongoing.
Did you have a question? Well, I was just curious. It's not quite as intense as the other discussion. You list guard dogs. We have guard dogs?
It's our canine expense. It's our three. Oh,
okay. Okay. I didn't know if there was another separate type of canine unit.
The board authorized a third canine,
okay.
And we've had some expenses. We had a canine die of cancer last fall. Well, we've replaced him. Training expenses, you know how it is.
Yeah.
Kenneling expenses.
It was the term guard dog that I was wondering what that was.
It's our canine.
Okay.
Any other comments? Questions?
Did you like a lot for more in your budget for like 2018 for overtime or just more officers in general?
We increased our overtime budget in the 2018 proposal $300,000. But we still will run up beyond that because we have never budgeted the correct number. It's something that would skew our final numbers on the budget so much so that the county board would beat up the sheriff. So. As I said, Madam Chair, there's no action required. We're just notifying the reallocation.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right, next is Kenosha County Sheriff's Department discussion regarding 2018 rates charged to municipalities for policing services.
We have us all here. Whoever would like to have answer questions. Or what we just were told that you would have questions of us. And okay.
Guess who this came from? Me. Bristol and Summers talked to me a little bit about it, that they've gone up quite a bit. And I was told you took out the young guys in your calculation. And why is that?
Basically, what happens is we schedule journeyman type officers to these contracts. And it's by request. We don't send rookies out there because there's a complicated mix between learning the county system as well as a new municipality. So the gentlemen that we are scheduling out there, women, they're usually your 5 to 7 year veterans. Their scale pays them a 7 year step increase throughout their first 7 years to top pay. So we're not reflecting the actual cost to the sheriff's department if we start factoring in that first step, those rookie individuals on their first pay. So that was eliminated to more accurately reflect what it's costing the deputies that are out there. They're assigned to these contracts. And that's really why that step was taken out of there.
Was the old way, so what you did last year, was that kind of the way that was done before, sort of, without thinking about in-depth? I mean, you went from one to the other. Why, you know what I'm saying? You did it with the younger guy's salary in the calc.
Correct.
Then you decided to take that out?
Correct.
Because you're saying to us, you don't get a young guy anymore. You get a, okay.
They, not anymore. They really never have.
Okay.
They've always wanted veteran officers.
Okay.
They don't want those. That
are so they were undercharged, is what you're saying.
Well, absolutely correct.
And if you want to compare specifically, if we talk about Summers, the two officers that are out there now that are assigned to that are actually, if you did the calculations, approximately $4,000 more expensive than is reflected in the contract. They are both 6-year veterans. And with their average overtime, with the 700 some hours last year between these two guys, none of that's reflected in the cost to Summers. So it is still a better price than it could actually be factored if we really want to get down to the nuts and bolts of what it's costing us to put Greg Andrews and Sean Beckstrom in Summers for one shift a day.
Is Bristol in the same position?
Yes. Bristol might even be a little bit worse because the guys out there are even more veteran than that. Dave Gomez has been around for how long? 15 years, roughly. And, you know, it's a service provided that is more fluid and more, I would say, efficient with experienced officers. If we ran them with young rookies, there would be issues probably with mistakes that we made.
In something we have never charged the contracted villages, we never charge them administrative costs, court officer costs, transportation costs. For the most part, there are no costs except for the wages of the deputy that's working. So we were undercharging them what they were getting. This is still undercharging them what they are getting. We're just trying to make it more realistic to what the county, what the sheriff is offering. It's a little bit closer to reality. That's why we changed. That was a decision that the sheriff made mid-year this year.
So, Greg, so you said somebody approached you from Summers?
Yes.
And their concern was the increase?
Well, they're going through their budgets.
Okay.
Both Bristol and Summers.
Would this explain to them by the sheriff's department? I don't know how that all works with Summers.
They did.
So explain why?
I can't. Bristol wasn't, from what I could tell. But that's not important necessarily. Jack at Summers understood it. But he had some other.
But when it was explained, I guess what I'm getting, because I didn't, you know, I never even thought about the overtime and then administrative costs. Was that explained? Do you guys know even? Was that explained to Summers that they're still being undercharged?
Well,
based on your numbers, or
the Summers meeting the last two times, and both times they took us off the agenda, so I went home.
Oh, okay.
I'm supposed to go back next Tuesday, and they're directing all their questions about the contract on Tuesday. And this will be reiterated, but we were out there, both myself, the chief, and Nancy Otis, explaining to them
okay. Why
this step was being removed. Oh, God, it had been, what, 3 months ago?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure they're not happy because nobody wants to pay more. So.
And you have to understand, too, the cost of medical insurances and benefits that we have to pay for these deputies also fluctuates from year to year. That goes up, we have to reflect that in the cost of the contract.
And you're 100% right. That's not so much the issue. It was that the formula got changed. That's just how the questions got brought up. It's like, gee, where did that come from and why? Well, and I understand what you're saying. I don't have a problem with that. I'm just saying if it had gone up, let's say you took the same formula, but you added a few bucks for health benefits and that, mm-hmm. Understood, but you threw a different formula in, that's... I'm just saying that's what just prompted this conversation.
And it was explained to them that they had an option for the increase to take effect over a couple of years or just put it on this year. And everybody just said, including Summers, just put it on this year instead of cutting it in half for a couple of years. That was their choice.
Okay.
But if you want a specific number, the two officers in Summers actually cost us roughly $203,746 a year, and Summers is getting charged $199,351.59 for that same bill. So I don't know, it just sounds like a discount to me, but that's the actual numbers for those two officers. Could we put other people out there? Sure I can. But then when the mistakes are made or the tickets are incorrect or, you know, the wishes of the village aren't quite up to expectation, you know, that's what's going to come with that because these young guys are still learning the job.
Yeah, no, I don't have a problem with that.
When we do work for Amazon or any other thing that's reimbursable, that's an actual cost because it's invoiced after the fact. It wouldn't be fiscally responsible for us to invoice after the fact because deputies transfer, deputies promote, deputies change. So we would have to invoice it on a monthly or quarterly basis. I don't see any government entity wanting to try to budget that with a sliding scale of this. So I think we were up front. They are getting as the numbers the captain mentioned, it's a 2% coupon. Not a great coupon, but it's 2% off what the actual costs are going to be. So
and it doesn't include the overtime. And that's if it's even village business. If one of our guys is hauled over on village business or contract business, that's not reflected in their cost.
So the first question I have, why are you giving them a discount?
Well,
because somebody else is carrying that cost now.
That's correct.
Right?
That's correct.
But like maybe let's just say Brighton's helping carry that cost.
That's correct. Overall, it has to be absorbed. There is a fluidness to the officers that are assigned out there. Some may get promoted, move out. I got to move guys in. Other guys may be requested to work out there. I've honored that a little bit. So we move. You know, we have some flexibility there with moving people in and out of the villages, and they're good with that. We also have the ability to, I suppose, add hours or take hours out. If an officer has to get called out of there for an emergency, that's in the contract. We have the ability to do that. Now, we backfill as soon as possible, put another squad in there. But if it's a big enough problem, then we have reserved that right to keep that officer out of there doing whatever emergency we have to respond to. So there is we're not trying to be too strict on exact dollars cents.
Understand because of the flexibility you're giving them a 2% discount. I'm trying to understand
it is.
Why.
It is.
Yeah. Because you're already not charging them overtime. So,
right.
So.
And it calculated over every time we had to move somebody in the schedule. Might be a little bit taxing, for this contract. We'd have to recalculate the numbers every time.
Forgive me if I don't get the numbers. I think you said the original, or the true cost is
203 or 204,000
charge 199. Why not 203 or this is called rounded up to 204,000? Why?
The decision when the original matrix was done with the new officer, mid grade officer, and top rank officer, pay officer, that was the matrix that was given. The sheriff also wants to retain these contracts. He also wants to be a good customer. So if there's a little bit of VIG going on, it's because we also want to be a good vendor for the contracts. We know, the sheriff knows, our entire department knows, they get a better law enforcement service contracting with us than having their own police departments.
No question.
So if it means $2,000.
It doesn't bother me at all that you guys adjusted the scale.
Yeah.
It's reflective of the quality or the experience level that's being provided. There's nothing
it's
wrong
definitely
with that,
closer
right?
to
it's not smoke and mirrors. I'm just,
yes.
I don't know. Okay, great. You want to give them a good customer discount, fine.
And ultimately, the sheriff would like to increase those costs, but we're also not going to destroy the budget for Summers or Salem Lakes.
So
because we'd like to have it be more realistic.
$5,000. Trust me, Summers, I live there, Greg and I do. They've destroyed plenty of budgets in their days. So don't be concerned.
Well,
that.
This one's going to be not good either.
So. Well, I'm shocked, right?
And I agree with you. I don't have a problem with it. I just want thank you for the explanation. That's all I wanted was just because this stuff gets brought up occasionally to me, and I just,
There's a lot of cost savings that they benefit from using us.
Not only the
resources are there, but think about the liabilities to the villages.
Oh, I agree.
That they no longer have to shoulder 100% when they're not employing their own officers.
We always talk about benchmarking, right? You have you ever done what it would cost per, let's just call it per law officer, if the village, either one of these villages, had their own force? Do you have it available, or is it available? And if not, I would certainly make it available.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can do a little Googling, right? And say, okay, yeah, we're charging you this. It's going to be substantially more. But it's a good response to worrying about whether or not the formula changed a bit because it would cost you here. We're here, and we gave you a 2% discount.
It comes back closer to even.
Real quick.
Yeah, it's close.
Yeah, no, I like the fact that we're contracting our law enforcement in Summers because it's, you know it is. If a village or city, they got to have their own law enforcement. They have to have their own fire department, this, own that. And next thing you know, your taxes are through the roof. So shared services is the way to go. In this case, it makes perfect sense. Now, you haven't gotten any complaints from your constituents on the quality of law enforcement, have you?
None.
Yeah, me neither. So That's, you guys doing a fantastic job. I like to see you write more tickets on highway.
Yeah. Little,
page,
well,
hundreds.
If you add more officers, that's definitely.
I understand if you're standing.
Definitely going to
happen. I'm just saying you could really make some cash on these, especially on Saturdays when all them
day shift with
Illinois plates
yeah,
are coming
sure
up.
It's
because they
Illinois
think it's
plate.
55 to the lake.
Yeah. Make sure it's an Illinois plate.
Yeah, ignore those Wisconsin plates. Sorry.
Any other questions, comments? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so next, Narcan program presentation by Debbie Ruger, the Health Services Coordinator.
Well, thank you for having us. I have all kinds of handouts here that I'll just kind of pass around if you guys wouldn't mind taking one and passing it around.
This
isn't
my own application,
Dan. No,
it's not.
You need it.
You carry Narcan.
You know what? You can take extra for sure.
Our friends obviously left. They had their Narcan and went home already. So, no. So we got the a 3-year grant at the health department to be able to distribute Narcan in our community, and we are in the second year of our grant. And the first year we concentrated on, you know, kind of staying close to home. Our staff, we tried to get the law enforcement involved as much as possible. We have 4 out of the 5, if I'm counting correctly, trained in Kenosha County. There's still one holdout. Mr. Wanbolt might know who I'm talking about.
Not my
fault. And again, we're working on him.
Is his last name Wanbolt?
It's not him personally.
Okay.
So we're working with them. It's not a no, it's just a wait and see with that law enforcement agency. But we've also opened it up to doing community trainings, and some of them have gone very well. We're still, again, trying to figure out exactly how to get Narcan in the hands of people that need it. For those of you that don't know, what is Narcan, what does it do? It's for people that overdose on an opiate, and that could be like Vicodin, Percocet, heroin, fentanyl, those type of things. It does not work on cocaine, alcohol, those type of things. So what we do is we have community trainings as well as the agency trainings, and we teach people how to administer it. Some of you might be thinking, why are you bringing these people back? These people are family members, they're friends, they're people that have a disease, which is called addiction. And we need to keep them alive in order to get them to the help that they need. And what we do then is just teach people, like I said, how to administer it. We are lucky to have the nasal Narcan. It's an easy application opposed to an IM, which is intramuscular, no needles involved. That kind of freaks people out a little bit. So a nasal Narcan is a little bit easier. To find out if people, how do you know if they're overdosing? We use the acronym BLUE. We want to look and see if they're breathing, and what does their breathing look like? If they're gurgling, sounds kind of like they're snoring, probably could be an overdose. A lot of times when we've done reviews of deaths, it's people say, "Oh, I just thought my loved one was snoring," and it turns out that they were probably going through an overdose. Then we look to see if their lips are blue. Their fingertips would also be blue. The U is unresponsive, so we're calling their name, shaking them, doing a sternal rub and saying, you know, are you okay, calling them by name. And then E is for the eyes, and we look to see if they have pinpoint pupils. Most people don't have their eyes open, so you're going to have to look and see what their eyes look like. If any of those are present, we encourage people to call 911, but then also administer Narcan. Brought along a little trainer with, this is what the applicator looks like. When we tell people to administer it, we need to have them laying on their back. People get real nervous and they say, well, if they're not breathing, how are they going to get this? It goes into the mucous membrane, you don't have to breathe it in like you do like a nasal spray. So have them lay on their back, and what we do is we insert this into a nostril, and then you want to make sure your fingertips are basically resting on their nostril, and then you're going to push the plunger. Okay, you don't have to prime it. If you push it just a little bit, it will release some of the medicine. It's not medicine. The what am I want to call it? I'm losing a word here, but
it's
I guess it's a medication. Yeah.
It's
so
not a,
It's so if you give it to somebody that doesn't need it, it's not going to harm them. So then what you would do is then put them in the recovery position. You put them on their side, put their hands underneath their head to kind of keep them from rolling forward, along with their top knee forward as well. Again, if you haven't called 911 by then, you definitely want to do it then. And then you wait 2 to 3 minutes. If it doesn't work, then you roll them back, and then you're going to administer a second dose in this other nostril. And again, EMS should appear very quickly after that. It depends on what's on board as far as what drug they've taken, how much they've taken, how long they've been addicted, that type of thing, as to whether this is going to work or not. We're seeing a lot of fentanyl deaths here in Kenosha County, and fentanyl is very, very potent. We've seen some kind of, it's 10, 12 administrations of Narcan in the field. Sometimes people come back, and some people do not.
For fentanyl, if they're on fentanyl, this would help too?
Correct. It can, but it's more potent, so it's going to take more of this to bring them back.
So how many kits are in each?
Good question. There are two. The instructions are right here so that you can review it when there's an emergency. Of course, we forget what the heck is the number we're even supposed to call. There is instructions on the inside of each one of these as well. When you open it, if you watch the video, it says, read your instructions. Well, you don't have time at that point. So what you do is you pull it back and you take the applicator out. But there are two in this kit, and we are giving one kit to each person that comes to the training. It is temperature sensitive. So if I leave it outside, if I leave it in a hot car, cold car, it could affect how well the medication is going
to work. So is that an issue then for law enforcement?
That's a very good question. What we did is worked it out with them as to what's going to work. You can't leave it in the car, so how are you gonna transport it back and forth? Some are put in their AED bags. Some of them are deciding whether they're wearing cargo pants. Maybe they can stick it in one of the pockets. Definitely not gonna put it on their belt because there's already too much stuff on there. And I know that law enforcement down in Lake County are using like camera bags, and they're attaching it to something, whether it's they have go bags or they have all.
So they're taking it out, say the armory, when they're checking
absolutely
their equipment
so
out?
Absolutely. So I pass it out, and if you're the officer I'm handing over stuff to, here you go. And so.
Well, what is our sheriff's department doing?
I believe they're putting it with their AEDs. They just are getting new ones or just got new ones. So. Their whole force is being trained. We did the train the trainer approach with them, and they are carrying it, and we've had 5 saves so far. Twin Lakes has had 1, Pleasant Prairie's had 2. Trying to think.
Okay.
Out in the county, yep. There's other, one of the ME's office is fire chief out in the county, and he has gone on calls that he's been able to use it on.
And I'm just curious, the 5 lives saved is fantastic. Any one, I hate to bring this up, but how many weren't?
That we don't know.
Won't you base it on the number of kits used versus?
The reason we know how many we've saved is because we have this kit that we give out, and there's a field training report, and we ask people if we've distributed it to them for them to fill that out. Is that going to be 100%? No. You can do it online. You can mail it in. You can stop by and drop it off by us.
So they fill that out if they've used it?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. They could say, well, I need another kit. And we say, oh, did you fill out the training report? And if they said no, then we would still give it to them.
So
but
how
we
many
encourage
doses
that.
Per vial?
So there's one dose in each one of these applicators. And I'll pass that
there's
around. You guys just
want
to kind of see. And then there's 2 in a box. So that's
so
2 doses.
You're talking like if somebody was on fentanyl and they had an overdose and they're going to need more, then where are they going to get more?
EMS. When EMS arrives, okay. They have it on board.
Mm-hmm. What would you give the same person? 2? You said that, right?
Mm-hmm.
You give 2. Okay.
Yep, absolutely.
A The 82 people that have been trained, according to your notes here,
mm-hmm.
who are they, generally?
There are people from the community, people that are concerned about their loved one. Maybe they have an issue. Some people are working for different agencies where they come in contact with people who have substance use disorders, and they want to be prepared in case somebody overdoses. We have our security trained at the county building because they have had people go down in our bathrooms because they're using in our bathrooms there. So it can just be anybody. So it could be a concerned citizen that, you know what, I just want to be prepared, because sometimes, you know, it's hard to know that your family member or a friend is using opiates, and it could come from, you know, dental surgery that you've been prescribed this. It could come from back pain, and this is your way of controlling it. And sometimes, you know, people just, they get addicted. Their body just is going to adjust to that and say, you know, I need this, and they can't figure out how to wean themselves off of it without going through withdrawal. And withdrawal is pretty unpleasant, we'll put it that way. So the other thing to have law enforcement have it is if you guys go down, you'll come across a scene and there could be airborne fentanyl there. That's why the ME's office is carrying it. A dog could go down. You can give a nasal Narcan to a canine, absolutely. So we want to make sure law enforcement, EMS, our medical examiner's office, anybody who's going to a scene that is prepared, because you just never know.
So in rough terms, it's about 4+ kids versus the number of people trained, right? Which means, so there's... You've got 369 kids.
Well, right? We
82 trained. Where are all those kids going?
Mostly at the sheriff's department.
Because we trained their captains, mm-hmm. sergeants. We trained one level. Mm-hmm. They in turn trained the next levels.
And so,
so you're not counting them as being trained then on this number?
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's not like we're going to use that because one of the things that I've heard is a practice by addicts is they'll get old in Narcan and they'll shoot up to a point where the, you know, your ODing and their partner, friend, whatever you want to call that person, will try and save them or have to save, use Narcan to save them. And I don't know if that's what it looked like, what's going on here, but
I don't believe so, because the withdrawal is so unpleasant that you don't want to come off your high. So I don't know why you would overdose on purpose and have somebody bring you out of it, because it's not a pleasant experience. And so I think it's people, you know, there's those stories about Narcan parties, and I have not found that to be true at all. We're asking a lot of people that are in the recovery community, what are you hearing? They have not heard of them.
Narcan party?
Mm-hmm. So basically people go and they overdose, and if you have Narcan, then you, but again, you're not guaranteed that you're going to come back. Mm. But I don't believe that those are, but that is true.
Will
that.
Well, the story that I saw circulated was the same story I read it about a dozen times, so I never saw a new story. It was it was just an article that was from the Detroit News, and everybody says that.
So when they train or train, they're using live kids.
We use the demonstrator, and okay. They watch a video that's on Narcan.com that explains it.
All right. So if we have, still again, 82 people trained, 369 kids. Mm-hmm. Are you saying that each trained individual has 4 kids with them?
No.
They'll have one of these kits.
A lot of our kids went to the sheriff's department. Okay. We trained about, was it about 40 people?
I believe so.
And I don't know how many mm-hmm. officers are in the sheriff's department.
Why don't you include that in your number then? Find out how many, and so you have an accurate number.
Yeah, it's just a lot of our reporting is done through the state. So
the state tells us how they want us to report.
Yeah, but that is a good idea. We will look into that.
And, I mean, if they've got an inventory, that's fine.
Sure.
But
and it's not just the, you know, the sheriff's department. It's Pleasant Prairie. It's Twin Lakes.
Yeah, because otherwise you're like, holy cow, we got an out of control
of stuff,
problem.
Right? Yeah.
Well, we do.
If we're using up that, but yeah. You know, significantly
that's,
worse. But
far
they're sitting on 250 of them. That's a big difference.
Yeah, they don't have that many. I would say they probably have 90 doses, but because I want to say that there's a kit at least, if not two, per patrol car, but I'm not sure how many patrols they have.
So let's just round it up to 100. That still mm-hmm. leave 269 kits that have been trained or used,
mm-hmm.
and we've only been able to count for 5
saves so far.
Saves.
Correct.
And the rest, I'm assuming then, either, let's say another 150 of them got trained, used in training. Mm-hmm. That's 140 applications you've used and save five. I mean, that would mean, okay, I'm doing some really quick math here. Mm-hmm. 140 deaths? But
no.
I don't think that that's
accurate. No. These are people who are carrying around
right.
Narcan. The people I trained was a grandparent whose grandson was going to live with them after they got released. He's supposedly clean. They just want to be safe.
No, I get all that. Is that accounted for in the 82? The grandparents?
Yes.
So those numbers are
people.
Skewed, though, because you're only giving out one kit per train other than what's maybe in an inventory somewhere. So maybe a clear breakdown of that would be...
Absolutely.
So we have two approaches. We train people, and we train agencies to train others.
Mm-hmm.
When they take their Narcan to train others, we currently are not being reported back to how many of the others they trained. We do know which agencies have how many Narcans. So there's four of us. We're not going
to
train the whole county by ourselves.
No.
So
but I still think that number should be, it's not hard, whether it's the state or whatever. If you gave them to the sheriff's department, how many did they train? If they trained 60, that should be included.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I think it benefits society knowing, hey, look at how many people are trained.
Sure.
It's working. Let's do this. And then other departments will see that it's happening and maybe jump on board.
Okay. So this is more like community numbers or the people that we've directly trained.
But you're in your third year of the grant, or second year of the grant, you said?
Mm-hmm.
So... how many kits do you get with this grant, or what's the amount of money, and what happens if you run out of kits? Is there more money available for kits, or is there only a limited amount?
Well, this was a federal grant. It took about a year for us to get them clear to us exactly what they wanted us to do. It's been a very slow starting grant. Needless to say, Debbie and I came in July. There was two other nurses that got transferred to a different program. There is a certain amount of money every year. I believe we bought
600 kits this year, I believe.
Is it 600 that we had from year one grant money? It has an expiration life of about 18 months. We're looking for ways that we can get out into the community, out into businesses. We're fighting a lot of stereotypes. Well, I certainly don't know anybody who uses prescription opiates or uses
heroin. You never
heroin.
Do until you do,
right?
Well, it looks like you're advertising, though. It looks like you're trying to get out.
We are. We've got two billboards out and about. We are outreach fairs. We have the lovely pens we've given you. This is a Narcan hotline that you can call and ask to come to a training in order to be able to carry Narcan. Sadly, we don't want people to say, oh, I wish I had. I wish I had known.
Right.
I wish I could have saved fill in the blank. And we do want to find a way to be able to get out into all the different areas of the community.
Do you have any clue how many kits have been used? Is there any
as far as we know, five, though I heard one the other week, six saves, is what we're asking people. This is only as good as the information that people give back to us.
So is there any way to track how many kits have been actually used? Because if there's 369 kits out and only five saved, that seems like very, very unsuccessful rates right now. So is there any way to figure out how many have actually been used? Because if only five kits have been used and five lives have been saved, that seems like it gives you a lot more knowledge about it.
Again, we've ask people to tell us, but we can't. I mean, I'm not going to follow up in each person. Hey, have you used your kit yet?
Mm-hmm.
It's just not feasible to do that. And plus, it, you know what? We want to keep it as not anonymous as possible, but you know, I don't want people to say, well, yeah, they called me and they asked me about this. And otherwise, what if they did use it and their loved one didn't make it?
Mm-hmm.
That's a little hard to bridge that phone call as well. So to me, five saves are huge, because if this law enforcement didn't have those people might not be alive. So, I mean, if you put a price tag on that life, then, I mean, it is working. Could it work better? Yeah. A lot of times, though, the state does dictate how we...
We reached an expiration date on the kits you've given in your first year?
No.
Or we're not to that point yet?
We
haven't hit that 18 months.
We just started training in, was July our first training, or was August?
I want to say it was August. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then what happens when they expire? They go to you?
Yep.
They're to be brought back?
Or you can put it in the medicine drop boxes, those okay. kind of things, sure.
Mm-hmm. But, or they would, but if they want to get a new dose, because they feel like mm-hmm. they still need one in hand, I would probably say, come back, we'll do a swap, and you can have it.
Right. Do you guys know, what does one cost? I'm just...
The two-pack is $75. Okay. Wow. The IM Narcan is cheaper, but a lot of people don't want to hassle with needles.
So, but, sorry, I just want to think, just with that, do the hospitals also have them in case someone is in their care and...
Yeah, they
or they do for sure.
Yeah, I was a nurse. In
oh, okay.
The they do a lot of times. It's okay. IV, right. IV, and sometimes it's continual IV. Drip depending on
okay. what's going
on. What was the name of that drug that's used? It's very expensive, but it
Vivitrol.
Yeah. Is that Vivitrol has to be done by a doctor, right?
No. We do it at the health department actually.
Okay, so the way that opioids work is that they sit on the pleasure center of the brain, but the secondary thing that they also do is they stop you from breathing. What we're trying to do is knock them off the receptors that control your breathing. And then hopefully 911 gets there with more Narcan. This lasts for about 20 minutes. And if you have more opioids in your system, then this can counteract. It's just going to flood back once that effect wears off, which is why it's really important to call 911. What Vivitrol does is it sits on those same opioid receptors, which blocks the opiate from giving the person the high.
Right.
And the one that we're using in the county is called Vivitrol. It's a long-acting, lasts for 28 days, and that gives them the opportunity to go into extensive outpatient counseling and hopefully make some progress into why they're using it in the first place. It doesn't solve anything. It's like a gift of time. That they can have an opportunity to make a change if they do the real effort of trying to figure out why they are where they
so
are.
So that's never done in an emergency situation. Vivitrol is not an emergency kind of drug like this is. That's just
long term.
I have a problem. I'm coming in. You'll suggest this as I go through a program. Is that
Vivitrol? For the
Vivitrol, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. Good question.
Okay, so thus far we've given out $27,675 worth of these.
Okay,
right?
Okay.
That grant's going to run out after 3 years. What's the probability of the grant being renewed? And if not, have you guys given much thought to if we want to continue and we're going to need to have a little bit more accountability, how we want to fund this type of activity?
Well, right now we're trying to follow the stipulations of the grant and get the data to justify the means. My understanding is that each autopsy we do costs $33,000, and each year we incarcerate somebody is $12,000 to $15,000. So while you're right, we have $27,000 of medication out there in the event of an emergency, I still think we're ahead of the game in terms of the cost financially to the community. And you know, that doesn't even touch the emotional loss of a loved one. And how are we going to sustain it? Hopefully we can justify the expense by doing all the recording. We do pre and post surveys when we do a training. We have everyone gives a email that we don't see that we pass on to the state reporting system, and they follow up with the individual. And we're hoping our data will be such that we'll be able to continue getting the grant for as long as we need it.
State grant, federal grant?
Federal grant through the state.
Through the state.
Okay. It's a SAMHSA grant.
All right. But given the fact that we've got 82 people trying, I can't get off of that. There should be 82 kits out there, but there's 369. We really don't know where they are or who's got them, right?
What I would be happy to do is I will get those numbers as far as how much each sheriff's department has and let you know their agency.
Are.
Yep. And I will forward them to the
sheriff's. In 18 months, you've got to replace them.
We have a question.
When the 3 years does run up, does that mean our law enforcement will not have these Narcan doses anymore? Well, does that mean they won't get the distribution? Or do we have something put in plan so they still have this accessible to them?
Those are all really good questions. I can't predict what's going to happen 3 years from now.
Okay.
But it's our best shot at the moment.
Okay, so they only started carrying them because of this grant? Is that the only reason they've started to carry them?
I think they were in the process of thinking about it, but they were looking into cost effectiveness or, you know, how much it was going to cost. And AIDS Resource Center also has Narcan, but they have IM, and they have very limited supply as well. So
it costs $75 a kit? So if we gave out.
So you can do the same calculation.
Even 400 kids.
I don't know why he's going to do that, but.
it's $30,000.
He said 27.
27.
I used 400. I went to 400. Honey. $251 million budget. How much is that?
Not very much.
Maybe we could find some money somewhere, like, general fund that's got 18 million on. Maybe, I don't know.
All right, I got a question.
That thing we can never touch, you know?
Are you guys in touch with other counties? Like,
yes,
we're seeing, I mean, what is, and do you know their stats? Like, we have five saved. Like, we're seeing, what do they have, or Milwaukee, or any of the others?
We have two other counties that are on this grant with us as well. We are going to be meeting with them in December, and we'll ask them.
What are the other two counties? Walworth and Racine?
It's Waukesha and Sauk County.
Oh.
And then Racine, I know, does a program as well through their health department.
And is their problem worse than ours?
I don't know.
Worse? How are we defining worse?
I live in
more use, more, or at least reported drug activity. I mean, they've consistently been that way throughout the last few decades, but I don't know about this. Right. I was just curious.
So it's interesting trying to get data, and you don't know what doesn't happen, right? Most of our drug users aren't reporting to us. All we really know is, you know, how many overdoses are coming into the different emergency rooms, how many people there are saved. So we are really, as a community, we have the Kenosha County Opioid Task Force, where we have about 35 agencies trying to work together so that we can have a collaborative, consistent approach. So we're gathering all the same data so we can measure oranges against oranges and see where we are. All we know right now is, you know, the number of deaths, the number, our autopsy. Do you have the current numbers? We had 40.
ODs?
We have 36.
We had 36 deaths. OD deaths.
Right, and 14 right. Pending, not all confirmed, and we're just starting the month of November.
I suppose there's no way, you know, the information about could this have saved them or not. I suppose you don't have any clue how that.
No. We get the information from Jim Poltrak from EMS for the city, and he'll tell us, like, he'll give us any, or, you know, any kind of stats we want as far as their saves and that type of stuff,
yeah.
Too. But no, I mean, it's hard to tell because sometimes you'll have Narcan administration and it's not needed. They might have thought, oh, that's what the person went down for. We don't always, you know, get that the correct information, but like Betsy said, we are trying to figure out a way that we can get that universal information from hospitals, from all EMS, all law enforcement in our area, so that we can all report the same things.
It seems like on EMS side, with all the stuff they carry, why this wouldn't be just standard issue to a certain
EMS does.
It's a little late, dude.
EMS does.
That's like call 911. They're coming to clean up the mess and fill out reports.
Well,
no. So our grant.
You're talking about a first responder that's available.
I understand, but.
Right. So our grant is to give the Narcan to people who do not have a source of it from anywhere else. EMS has their own Narcans. Hospitals have their own Narcans. So police departments didn't. And they were looking to see where they could get it from. We had the wonderful opportunity to have the grant. We wanted those people to be supplied and trained and supplied right away. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot more people to reach.
Do you get any data on the five saves, whether or not they relapsed or really don't get there?
I think that's HIPAA.
Where they were located? Do you know that?
Were they what? I'm sorry.
Where it was actually given, like in Kenosha.
I said two in Pleasant Prairie, one in.
Oh, I'm sorry.
One in Twin Lakes, and then two out in like Wheatland.
Oh, okay.
Area.
I'm sorry if you said that.
So, do you schedule your training classes every so often, or when people call?
It's in both and.
Mm-hmm. It's what?
Both and.
So we were scheduling them on a weekly basis because we had some advertising out.
Okay.
Now it's kind of. We've had them scheduled and nobody has signed up, so we have to reevaluate how we're going to get the word out.
So, but if somebody wants some training, they just have to call this number,
mm-hmm.
and you'll just take care of it.
Yes,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's our Narcan hotline.
Have you been with Joe Potente to show this on our website?
I was just going to say that.
Go ahead.
I was just thinking.
Have you done that yet?
We have not put it on.
You should probably put that on your list to get that out on.
We're working on our website to get this information on there. Are you talking like Facebook page or are you talking website?
Both.
Website, we're working on. It's a slow process.
So I think website, I mean, to me, is only reached so many. It's social media. Got to get that rolling.
I'm the social media person and I'm working closely with Joe. I met with him yesterday.
Okay.
He has our billboards.
Share.
He has everything that we're doing and it's going to be out. And our Facebook page just went live last week. So
there you go.
Well, even, you know, when Joe posts things, I know Supervisor Frederick, I share the stuff that he will post,
right,
too. So if you guys do that, we'll share it.
We brainstormed different agencies, not only people who are working with known people who have used or are in recovery. We would love to get into Amazon and Uline and make sure that there are people there trained. So if anybody has ideas, suggestions, call the Narcan hotline. We are more than happy.
Well, I like that way of thinking because maybe there'd be a big donation or something. Or maybe if the Kenosha News ran a really cool
article. Tell me, if they give us all the TIF money back, you'll give them to them free.
Or if we lived in Lake County, you know, we have the Narcan donated because that's what they do down there because of maybe a pharmaceutical company or something.
Considering his net worth went up 20%.
Anyway, we're very excited about the program. We thank you for your time.
Thank you. Last week, up 20%.
I did bring a kit. I don't know if anybody wants to peek in there. It's listed what's in there. Sometimes we get questions for that. We literally give the person a kit and then this, and they can take whatever's in the kit and they can leave whatever else behind because sometimes people are like, it's a harm reduction kit is how we look at it. So
is the IM version, is it a combination product so it's in delivery or is it an actual syringe?
It's a combination. So you have a vial.
Kind of like an EpiPen style.
You have a vial and you have a syringe. So then you have to draw. Yeah.
So they don't have the combination device.
Right.
Or combination product.
EpiPens are probably the most expensive. I don't know if you know, follow just even the EpiPens for asthma are like $400 or $500 right now. I can't imagine with the Narcan EpiPen or the Narcan pen.
So you have to draw up the IM version.
You have to draw up the IM.
It doesn't stay stable if you have it in like a
I don't think they have any syringes that won't accidentally get pushed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Plus, now you're talking about giving people needles, and that would be,
it takes time to draw things.
It's a needle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so you're worried about Narcan parties. I mean, handing out syringes to people would. Mm-hmm. Now people are going to be like, well, I don't want to have syringes around because then somebody might use my syringes for something other than what, I don't know. There's a lot of stigma out there. We have been to different outreach fairs where people walk by us and they're like, well, we don't know anybody and we wouldn't need Narcan. But
opioids are basically pain relievers. And I mean, does that include tramadol? Does that include?
I do not believe tramadol, but
there should be a
Percocet, Vicodin. Morphine are all one. There are opioids and there are opiates, and one is the natural drug, and the other one is a synthetic that looks just like the natural drug. And a lot of times, people, the problem with the opioids or opiates is that they are addictive very quickly. You get dependent on it very quickly, and some people do and some people don't. If you like the feeling of being on it, the problem is that the withdrawal is really awful. And so for someone who has gotten dependent on it, they are less chasing the high and more avoiding the withdrawal. And it becomes this vicious cycle.
I have firsthand experience because I was in an emergency room next to someone who was going through withdrawal.
Yeah.
And I got to hear it for a good couple hours.
It's probably not pretty.
No, it's not. I'm a nurse. I've seen a lot of
That's right. And obviously we would like to get ahead of the curve and talk more about prevention and give people tools and opportunities and, you know, resources to be on that end. But right now we're just trying to save them. We're trying to get it from all sides. Mm-hmm.
Is there a downside to using Narcan? Or not like a downside, but is there a negative effect? So if someone wasn't and it got dispensed in them, is there any negative side effects?
So if you went down and you were having a heart attack instead, no.
Okay.
It's not going to harm them. The only possible thing I would say, I mean, like if somebody had an allergic reaction, but
okay.
I think that's...
But what does it actually do? I mean, is it goes to the brain to stop? Is that how it works, or how does it?
So what happens with the opiates is that they depress the center, the brainstem, that causes us to breathe. And so it removes the opiates from that and enables the brainstem to tell yourself to breathe. Because we typically don't have to tell ourselves to take every breath we take. That's an autonomic function, right? It happens okay. automatically.
Okay.
And the opioids suppress that. It stops that from working. The Narcan knocks the opiates okay. off of that, which is why you start breathing. And it also knocks the opiates off the pleasure center. This is getting too technical. And that's why they go into withdrawal and they get really annoyed.
But from a standpoint of an OD, that's why I was asking the question. I get Vivitrol takes care of what you were talking about.
Right? No, right now I'm talking about Narcan.
Okay, but Narcan's for an overdose of what?
The opioids and you're shutting down your breathing center.
Or how about fentanyl then? Same difference?
Yep. Fentanyl is an opiate.
So... Wait, okay, let me get this. So if I'm ODing, I'm having too much, I'm not breathing because that's if I just took one opiate, I'd probably be okay. Well, I mean, many, many people take opiates and aren't ODing.
Right, okay.
I mean, it's been around for a long time.
It has. Right. It was.
I'm trying to say, think, what's the difference just having, when I'm ODing, what's happening to me?
You have too much.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, again, so heroin, is there a safe amount for you to take? No. I mean, because it's not like, okay, I can take this and I'll be okay. It's like you're playing Russian roulette every single time because it could be laced with fentanyl. It could be laced with something
else. Okay, I got you.
So basically that your body is going to shut down because it's going to stop you from breathing. So if you're taking over-the-counter or medication that's prescribed to you.
Well, different people react to.
Exactly.
Right.
But if you're taking prescription pills and, I took one this morning. Oh, did I take one? I'm just going to take another one. Otherwise, you have a person with dementia or, you know, memory issues, and they just keep taking them. Well, it's because your body can't,
So it's Russian roulette on this if I'm going to OD.
Right. It is. Okay. It is. So you might have taken one pain pill. It didn't quite work. You know you're supposed to wait 4 hours, but you decide to wait 3. It's starting to feel real better. You think you're going to double up on it. That third one might be the one that sends you over the edge.
I gotcha.
So we would like to see doctors dual prescribe, which means that if they're going to give you a bottle of Percocet, they're going to give you Narcan in the event that you would take too many.
Probably sounds dumb, but you can't overdose on Narcan, can you? Like, if someone isn't paying attention, they give you, like, 2?
No.
And as Debbie said, it's not necessarily going to be enough if the opiate used was so powerful that 2 Narcan weren't enough to knock it off.
Getting back to Vivitrol for a sec, what is that? Okay, it takes away that... Whatever.
The receptor.
That was explained to Mike Greer. Okay. Why, like you just talked about taking both, why couldn't you take...
No, they're 2 different things. Vivitrol is not an opiate.
Right. But...
It's a blocker.
Thank you.
Okay,
it's a form of treatment.
It blocks the ability for opioids to affect...
Then if I'm an opiate taker, why don't I take this? Can a doctor prescribe it?
And you get nothing out of it.
Could a doctor prescribe it?
Prescribe.
Vivitrol, along with my opiates.
No, because then the opiate wouldn't work. Then it wouldn't give you the pain relief that you want.
It does. It takes away what opiates do for you. Okay.
It blocks what opiates do.
Narcan's only temporary.
Right. So Vivitrol blocks...
I thought Vivitrol...
Narcan...
Oh, I didn't. Okay, I got you. So, okay, I thought it just stumped the brain thinking you're not high or whatever. Okay.
No, it blocks it. Blockers.
Blocks from what? Okay, but so that's if I take Vivitrol, I'm still in pain?
Okay. We only give Vivitrol for people who are trying to stop using opiates that aren't being used to treat pain.
People using opioids are not in pain, they're addicted.
They want the high.
Thank you.
Okay.
right?
So if you're not giving it to someone that comes in, I've got
no.
I've had this back so bad that if I have to take opiates, I can't walk.
Kick the habit.
Okay, so ones that take it for just pure pleasure, not pain. All right.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. May have started from the back pain, but it's...
Oh, they didn't start that way, but they got that way. They got that way from all the prescriptions.
Do you have these, like, around the city in different places, like the municipal building or the libraries?
I don't think we've gone out.
You know, the Boys and Girls Club, I know we put stuff out there a lot.
That would be great.
I'll take a stab.
Always here's cards, too. I don't know. I didn't pass off the cards, but if anybody wants those, we can...
Are you leaving?
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Get a training.
Okay. Yes, come and be trained. Call the hotline number. Yeah.
I don't want to waste your cards. I don't need these. So.
Okay. Any other business allowed by law?
Which is quite high.
What's it?
Right.
So recommended is RT.
But when you're sitting in a car, it could be, could get
easily. Don't know.
Motion to adjourn.
Yes.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
The hobbles in paper.
No.
Hi.
Good meeting. Okay. This was informative.
Sure.
He's not coming.
Jennifer soon.